So, weird story about this week's classic episode. I think I spent the entire episode trying to shoehorn in the fact that some lizards have something like a third eye. It's on their forehead. It's sensitive to light. And it didn't fit in this episode. It's entirely because this episode, in a way, is about a third eye, right?
Yeah, and interestingly enough, it has to do with light-sensing cells that could be in your forehead. That is weird, just like those lizards Ben's talking about. And what if that is very, very special to humans and anything with a consciousness?
Yeah, and it turns out your third eye is actually a gland. So chew on that for a while.
This is a trippy one. We can't wait to hear what you think of it. This is one of the classic ones where we dove into some deep water pretty quickly. Mm-hmm. So let us know what you think.
From UFOs to ghosts and government cover-ups, history is riddled with unexplained events. You can turn back now or learn the stuff they don't want you to know. Greetings. Welcome back to the show. My name is Matt.
And I am Ben.
Is the tiny pinecone-shaped gland in the middle of your head a gateway to alternate realities? Perhaps to an inner spiritual place? Or is it just your body's ingenious way of manufacturing your sleep cycle and monitoring it? Or maybe, is it something in between? That's today on Stuff They Don't Want You to Know.
I like that intro quite a bit, Matt. That's exactly what we're talking about. We are talking about the pineal gland. And to follow up then, I guess one thing that we could say is that it's totally understandable that people would think of it as a third eye. You and I recently did a couple of videos on the pineal gland, something we had returned to. Remember very early in our days, we did a fluoride episode.
Yes, and the pineal gland was right at the center of that episode.
Mm-hmm. And the pineal gland is, as you said, a pine cone-shaped organ. It swings above its weight class in terms of performance in the body and the brain because it produces two very important hormones, serotonin and melatonin.
Mm-hmm.
And I think we say in the video that melanin and melatonin are very different, so don't get them mixed up.
Oh, yeah. It has nothing to do with the pigmentation on your skin. It's the melatonin is the thing that doesn't it get your body into a sleep state or it coaxes mm-hmm. your body towards a sleep state?
Yeah. It tells your body nap time.
Yeah.
Is essentially what it does. And one thing that really interested you and me about this is that the pineal gland, even though it's inside the brain, is actually able to sense and react to light.
Yeah. It's an iPhone. It's not an old flip phone. It's got some new features.
Yeah.
But they're actually really old features. They're just upgrades, I guess.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, that's really weird. Well, no, that is a way to say it because we do know that some animals have a similar thing that we should differentiate now. There's the parietal eye, which you also hear called the third eye. It's associated with the pineal gland, and it's present in some animal species. Like there are reptiles that have well-developed third eyes, lizards, frogs, lampreys.
You can see pictures of amphibians that have a lot of frogs that have mm-hmm. a parietal eye, and it's kind of weird looking. Just looks like a tiny little dot in the middle of their what would be their foreheads.
Also able to sense light. And we talked about how for thousands of years, very smart people have been breaking their heads against the wall to figure out what the pineal gland is, right?
Yeah. It's a fascinating thing. We're always looking for that exit into the other realities. Mm-hmm. I don't know. It seems like it could be a key. It could be, but there are no definitive answers yet. There's a lot of research going into it,
mm-hmm.
but I don't know. We'll have to find out, but let's explore what we know.
Okay. So we know that it's As we said, it's pretty small. In adult humans, it's a little under a centimeter in length, or 0.3 inches. It weighs about 0.1 grams, so it's not something that you would immediately notice if you happen to be opening up someone's head for the first time and digging around. You know, just in case you're doing that now and you're like, guys, where's the pineal gland? I'm in a hurry.
We'll go towards the center and look for that little,
it's like a pine cone.
Yeah, I've heard it say it's the size of a grain of rice, but it's a little bigger than that.
Mm-hmm.
But still, it seems rather insignificant when you are looking at the structure of the brain.
So we do know that the pineal gland is an endocrine gland or an endocrine organ, but we also know that it's pretty enigmatic. It's kind of a shady neighborhood of your brain because it is associated with a lot of mental functions that modern science still does not understand. One of those big ones would be sleep.
Yeah.
You know, like it's a lot of different neurological factors are involved in sleep and physical factors as well. But if we think of sleep as like the heist or the object of a heist film,
okay,
then the pineal gland is totally in that Ocean's 11 crew. Like it's a key player.
I got you.
A little too far down the street for that.
No, I like it. I like it. Well, yeah, I was thinking about sleep as one of the main mysteries here, just sleep in general and why animals need this restful cycle.
Mm-hmm.
And there's a ton of research going into this and just what the heck is it? Why do we need it to happen? And it turns out, at least from some of the current research, that sleep is highly important for our brain's functioning because it's essentially strengthening the connections that you made throughout the day, kind of organizing the information that you took in, creating, strengthening the memories that you've created in that day. And it's really strange the way your brain then connects new ideas up to the established ideas that you already have. It's freaking fascinating. And it really reminds me of defragging a hard drive, making sure all of the bits and data are put together in the right place.
And I think that's a fantastic point that we should consider there with sleep, because everything you said is true. It's absolutely true that we have some very good guesses. I also tend to believe the memory encoding part, but we don't know entirely what sleep does, like completely. I think that the memory encoding part, especially with that comparison of defragging a hard drive, is absolutely spot on. We know that the need for sleep varies according to age. Like very young babies will sleep in around 20 hours every 24 hours, which has got to be refreshing to a lot of parents, right?
Yeah.
And we know that as people age, they get into this period where they're somewhere between 7 and 9 or 6 and 9. And then as you become older, and I mean like elderly,
okay,
not late middle age, but as you become an elderly person, then you can often sleep less and less.
Yeah.
So we know that without melatonin, sleep is a very difficult process. We know that sleep is also a way that our body can rest itself.
Mm-hmm.
'Cause you know, if you think about it, and you and I have talked about this before, man, if you think about it, sleep is just, to me, phenomenally irritating. I hate sleep.
Yeah. That you have to get some.
Yes. That I'm beholden to this bag of humanity that I'm currently residing in, I guess. You know, how strange is it if you have to explain sleep to an alien species?
Yeah.
You're so tired of this one. You've heard it.
I love it, though.
Okay.
Tell me.
All right. So here you go. You meet some aliens. Take me your leader or whatnot. And then you take him to your leader, but the leader has to go to sleep, right? And so the aliens say, what's going on? And you say, oh, well, here on Earth, you know, we're pretty normal. Every couple of hours or so, we just lose consciousness. lose control of our body, and we vividly hallucinate. And then sometimes when we wake up, we don't know what really happened.
Got to get some coffee, and then we just start the whole process over again.
Yeah, and then we have, you know, another set of hours before the hallucinations begin. And it's strange, but it is true that sleep is necessary. Like, just for a quick sidebar, you know, we've talked about the DARPA research and other, like the Uberman sleep cycle. What's your take on that stuff?
The Uberman sleep cycle, oh man. Okay, so I have not attempted to change my sleep cycle up. Well, okay, I have not been successful in any attempts to change my sleep cycle. I did try it one time after you and I spoke, actually. And I don't know, I couldn't get my mind and my body to sync up. Mm-hmm. And I'd just be groggy all the time. And in theory, when you change your sleep cycle into the Uber, what is it called? Uberman?
I think it's Uberman, yeah.
Uberman, that's when you take like 20-minute naps at certain times during the day, and then another one fairly long sleep cycle. Or I don't know exactly. I know there are different iterations.
Right, yeah.
But yeah, I tried the one where you just sleep for 20 minutes, then you're up for 2-3 hours, and you sleep for 20 minutes.
Oh, that's hardcore, Matt.
Yeah, that didn't work out so well. My wife got a little upset with me.
That I'm glad you made it, because
I only did it for a week.
That seems really difficult. That was one that was really difficult for me to try for a very long time. I did 2 4-hour cycles,
okay,
right? Which is sort of the beginner of the Uberman.
See, but I jumped in the deep end. I shouldn't have done that. That was my fault. To be fair, Dark Souls came out, and I really wanted to play it for as many hours as I could.
Oh, weird. You were in a nightmare space.
It was intense.
Between waking and reality. And your pineal gland, with sensing light at various times that it may not have been used to, was probably scrambling to adjust to this as well, right? Mm-hmm. Your circadian rhythm felt a little off.
Oh, yeah. It was haywire, to be sure. Thank you for bringing us back, by the way.
No. This is a good question, though, because What if we were in those situations and our pineal glands were damaged? We know that one thing that could happen, at least in kids, is that if a kid's pineal gland is damaged, whether through cancer or an injury of some sort, then they're going to tend to enter puberty earlier.
Really?
Yes. Really, because the pineal gland appears to play a major role in sexual development as well. Also, a hibernation, if you're someone who says the Uberman sleep cycle is the opposite direction of where I want to go, I want to lump sum all my sleep over winter.
Jeez, yeah, give me 4 weeks, please. Thanks.
Wow, that would be weird. Would you do that?
Oh, I don't think so. I don't think I could handle it.
If there were a scientific way to sort of make a lump sleep payment, then I would do it.
Oh, that's fantastic.
I don't know. They'd have to put some sort of limit on how long you could do it, or else we have people Rip Van Winkling like 7 years of sleep.
Well, yeah. And if you have any kind of responsibilities in your life whatsoever, you just can't do it. There's no way.
Oh, that's right.
Sorry, kids. I'm going to be gone for 4 months.
And then I'll have my eye on you all the time. That's pretty messed up.
Just stock a bunch of Pop-Tarts up and leave the kids on their own. Mm.
We also know that the pineal gland can, there's some pretty strong evidence that the pineal gland can influence the action of some drugs like antidepressants and Tony Montana's favorite, cocaine. So this brings us to, let's see, that's all I've got about what we know the pineal gland does. And there's a lot of other stuff, too.
Okay, yeah. So the big thing, the takeaway here is pineal gland helps regulate sleep. And it's important. It's really important for that, because sleep, as we found out, if you don't get enough sleep, there are some crazy things that can go on inside your brain. There's some neurological problems that you can find just from the effects of insomnia. So it's important. It's crucial. We've established this. Now, let's get a little crazy, Ben.
Absolutely, Matt. Let's get crazy with it.
All right.
Before we jump in head first to all of the interesting fringe ideas surrounding the pineal gland, I think it's time for a word from our sponsor. What about you?
Wow, man, I keep forgetting that we even have sponsors. I'm just grateful that someone's willing to help us make this show.
Yeah, it's kind of weird sometimes that they're all subsidiaries of the same company, but...
Hey, man, I don't care as long as that money's coming in.
Well, hello there, sir. You seem a little bit unfocused.
Yeah, I've been having a hard time. When I watch TV and have my phone out, I can only see one at a time. It's weird.
Ah, yes. Now, that's a common problem in today's society with so many devices and so much content to consume. Two eyes just won't cut it. You, my friends, may be suffering from third eye myopia.
Third eye what?
Third eye myopia. Why, it's a common problem both in the Upanishad and numerous other religious texts. You see, your third eye, which can access all sorts of spiritual planes, is often not being used to its fullest extent in the modern day, which is, of course, to allow you to watch television or read your iPad while reading a book. Or watching your kids.
Oh, and that's just my dream, man. That's everything I've ever wanted.
Well, then we have just the deal for you, sir. May I introduce you to Third Eye Glasses?
Oh, they're so shiny. And what's this thing in the center?
What a great question that we will answer when the litigation, which is ongoing, has been concluded. Yes, Third Eye Glasses. They will allow you to channel the rather useless connection with a higher plane of truth into something that matters to you, like MacGyver reruns or Mr. Belvedere Marathon.
Does it have Saved by the Bell?
Of course it has Saved by the Bell. That comes free with purchase, and for just a nominal limited fee per month, you can access thousands of other 80s sitcoms and 90s sitcoms.
Well, I'm sold.
Well, thank you, sir. Yes, another satisfied customer for Third Eye Glasses. Please consult your doctor and cable provider before making the purchase.
Makers of Third Eye Glasses are not responsible for reverse osmosis, myopia, use of bifocals, shattered lenses, lying to children, kicking puppies, misapprehending police forces, ongoing litigation in foreign countries, myopia, dystopia, dyslexia, anorexia, misapprehending the path of a boomerang, unoriginal cartoon ideas, DMT overdoses, pineal gland deposits, fluoride accretion, calcium accretion, potassium phobia, or magnesium in all of its forms. Third Eye Glasses are a division of Illumination Global Unlimited.
Wow, I didn't even know those glasses existed. Again, I'm just glad that we have a sponsor, so.
Yeah, I had not heard that ad before. That's an interesting one.
Did you catch the last part? The little legalese that they sped up at the end there?
Oh, come on, man. Everything has something like that. I'm sure like the Slinky had some pretty extensive warnings too.
I heard something about boomerangs, but I don't know.
Boomerangs. Maybe there was something in there about boomerangs. I'll listen to it again. But if it is in there, I'm sure there's a reason.
There could be nothing nefarious with Illumination Global Unlimited. That's fine, right?
No. And according to a statistic that I made up just now, literally tens of dozens of people may have died due to boomerangs.
That's pretty grim.
But that was a little bit weird, and it's a good segue to talk about some of the things that are more odd or controversial about the pineal gland, because, Matt, as we said, people around the world do and have believed for some time that it's a seat of spirituality.
Mm-hmm.
But there's something else there, too. There's the belief that fluoride can accumulate in the pineal gland and cripple its function, right?
Yeah, it can calcify it.
Yeah,
this is really interesting to me. This is one of the first things that we ever covered as a show. I think it was episode 5 or 6 or something, where we discussed fluoridation of water, specifically in the United States, and the legal battles that were going on in order to make that happen, what kind of fluoride is actually going into the water.
Right, because as a lot of people are unaware, there are multiple types of fluoride.
I went to the dentist just the other day, and I was looking through some of their Colgate, the bottles of Colgate that they give away for free when you go and see the dentist, and one of them had or there, I looked at three separate ones, and all three had different types of fluoride. Only one of them used sodium fluoride. One of them was monofluorophosphate or something like that, and then there was another one. But anyway, it was fascinating to me to see even now, fluoride products have varying different types of fluoride in them.
Right. Yeah. And for most, I would say it's fair to say that for most consumers, at least in the United States, when you think of fluoride, you think of just one thing.
Yeah. Sodium fluoride is what you're
the common one, right? Mm-hmm. The clinical grade or whatever it's called. But we also know that in fluoridated water systems, there is a different type of fluoride involved in there.
And a lot of times it's kind of a, what do we call it? It's a byproduct of factories sometimes, of different processes.
Yeah. Opponents of fluoridation have a couple of things that I would say are bones to pick about the production of fluoride itself, the kind that's put in the water supply. And that's stuff from the phosphate industry or during the early days of atomic bomb construction. The radioactive materials, the manufacturing process resulted in fluoride as a byproduct. So the question then became, was this actually good for the human population to put it in the water, or was it instead sort of a ploy by an industry or by government in order to repress knowledge of building these atomic weapons, or just to circumvent EPA regulations that otherwise would have been quite expensive.
Yeah, rather than having to pay to have these chemicals disposed of somewhere, why not let's get paid to put it into the water source as a benefit? I really don't know how I feel about this subject, Ben, because back in the day when we were going over this stuff, it was very difficult, or at least I found it difficult, to find unbiased sources for really anything about this subject. Mm. Fluoride Action Network was one of the places we found. And I mean, that's just obviously against it. I don't know where that money's coming from to fund that thing.
Right. They're against fluoridation. Their Fluoride Action Network does sound like a dynamic name that could go either way, but they're definitely against fluoridation in the water system, primarily because according to them, there are numerous health concerns that aren't addressed. They're not talking so much about specifically pineal gland damage in a spiritual sense, which we'll find in some conspiracy theories, but they're talking more about possible developmental damage. And one of the biggest arguments there is that the average public person doesn't know where this fluoride is coming from. And secondly, that there are not enough cohesive studies on the events. And I love that you said it was difficult to find some unbiased sources, because this is an incredibly contentious subject. So much so that you and I are probably getting hate mail from people on both sides of the argument just by bringing it up, which really says something. And people who consider themselves skeptics or debunkers will argue that this is all alarmism, right? There's sensationalism, and that fluoride in the water itself is a benefit, as the American Dental Association argues, because it lessens the it lessens the development of cavities or the development of tooth decay. And usually when people say this, they're very angry about it.
Yeah.
And I'm not sure why they're so very angry about it, but boy, they are steamed. And this, of course, happens on the other side as well. My primary issue as an individual only with fluoridation is that with it in, regardless of what the PPM or part per million is, it's very difficult to control a dose if it is something like, if we consider this like a medicine, right, or a health benefit, then it's very difficult to say, you can only have this much in your system at any given time. And you add to that toothpaste, a lot of people who have brown stains on their teeth and, you know, they don't drink coffee or tea and they don't smoke cigarettes or something else. What they end up doing is getting these brown stains from a condition called fluorosis, which happens because of.
You have too much fluoride. Sorry.
Yeah. You'd think it's the opposite, but, too much fluoride discolors your teeth.
Okay. So the biggest thing that we couldn't find is a scientific study that shows the calcification or the pineal, the fluoride buildup inside the pineal gland. At least I was completely unable to find anything, a scientific study on this where it's repeatable. And that to me right there is kind of a red flag.
Yeah, there is. That's
at really least not in point. Humans, I should say.
Ah, yeah. Okay. That's a good point. We have seen some studies that have linked the accumulation of fluoride, but also as of calcium with age. And there's one study that's often posted, I believe, by an author named Jennifer Luke. And in this study, she linked fluoride accumulation in the pineal gland, but she did it by looking at the 11 cadavers, and they were elderly. So there's not a long-term study of a person's brain, which would be pretty expensive.
Here's the thing. How do you even do that? I guess it's just MRI after MRI, or I don't even know if that would be the correct thing to use, but just studying someone's brain for the entirety of their life, and you'd have to do it on numerous people.
Right. Yeah, exactly. So I've got a little bit about Dr. Luke's research. This is written by a professor named Paul Connett at St. Lawrence University in 2001. And Dr. Connett says that Luke had a couple of things she found out about the pineal gland. She said this little gland in the center of the brain is responsible for a lot of stuff. We know that. She also found it was a calcifying tissue like teeth and bones. So she hypothesized that it would concentrate fluoride to noticeably high levels because it's not protected by a blood-brain barrier and it has a what's called a high perfusion rate of blood. And that's second only to the kidney. So she found high levels of fluoride in these 11 cadavers, but there's some other stuff that we still have to deal with. You know, is this something that would just naturally accumulate in someone as they age? To what degree does fluoride inhibit the functions of the pineal gland, and which function specifically does it inhibit? Now, I'm sure for a lot of people, especially some of our younger listeners, the idea of reaching or going through puberty sooner might sound just great, you know?
Sure.
I don't know. Maybe. Takes all types, right? But is there a biological price paid for that later?
It's interesting. It takes me back to what you were talking. We were talking about sleep earlier when what we were talking about as you get older, you need less and less sleep. And I wonder if there is a connection there with the calcifying of your pineal gland, its function stops working so well. And I wonder if your body kind of is making up for that in requiring less sleep because maybe your melatonin just isn't what it used to be.
Huh. Interesting hypothesis there, Matt. That's something I'd like to hear more about also from our listeners. We have to talk about some other ideas about the pineal gland.
I know my favorite one.
What is it?
DMT.
Ah, yes, DMT. Okay, so lay it on me. What's the gist?
Well, I learned about this when I watched a trailer for a movie called The Spirit Molecule, a documentary, and it's discussing whether or not the pineal gland releases small amounts of DMT during your sleep cycle. And that basically the idea is that, or the original thought is that maybe that's why we hallucinate and have these insane dreams sometimes that don't make any sense this way or that. Is it because we are tripping when we're sleeping?
Mm-hmm. Yeah, and DMT is the more casual name for dimethyltryptamine. This hypothesis was for a long time fringy and controversial, and it's still very controversial, by a guy named Rick Strassman is one of the main proponents of this, who also had the idea that you get this rush of DMT when you're dying.
Yes.
Right?
The final moments of death are, that's fascinating to me. Mm-hmm. The idea that it's kind of, it never ends.
Didn't Aldous Huxley get shot up with hallucinogens before, like, as he died?
I remember hearing about that, but I haven't read any official accounts.
Well, maybe that's a story for another day. But for a long time, this was very controversial. It remains controversial. But there have been, there's been at least one study done that I know of, which showed that, rats seem to produce some amount of DMT, naturally.
Mm-hmm.
And we know how dangerous it is to say, well, it happened to a rat, so clearly it happens to every other animal. But it is an indication that more research is needed.
Absolutely.
At the very least.
Yep, yep. So one of the more fascinating things that you can find when you start researching DMT in the pineal gland, you eventually get to, or maybe even start near ayahuasca and its use in tribal regions and certain religions in South America and other places, ayahuasca is essentially DMT and a couple of other substances mixed together. And it produces a very strong hallucinating trip,
mm-hmm.
where in these cultures, it's used as a spiritual journey, as a way to kind of conquer internal demons. And when you pair that up with kind of the fascination and fears of the soul and the afterlife in the Western world, I think that right there is ultimately the fascination. The reason that people really want to know more about this in the pineal gland and what the heck is it and is it really a key?
That's part of the ongoing search, as you say, for the soul.
Yeah, well, basically the idea is, well, do they know something that we don't know, or have we forgotten something?
Yeah, and a lot of people do believe that's true for one reason or another. This calls to mind one of my favorite phrases. I can't remember who said this. It was either an artist or a neuroscientist. Very
sure.
Closer than you would think sometimes. The idea was that the more we search for the human soul, the less we find of its existence. But the longer we search, the more that search itself seems to indicate that something's there.
Whoa.
You know what I mean?
Okay, yeah. So you can't find the hard evidence,
mm-hmm.
but
there's still this sort of undeniable
there's
compulsion.
Something there.
There's this inevitable need for the conscious mind to somehow understand what exists past it or beyond it.
Mm.
And I think that's a worthwhile endeavor. I also think that we should mention that the pineal gland has been linked to people who claim to be able to travel astrally.
Yes.
So if you like Matt and I are fans of those Mysteries of the Unknown, Time Life books and the Unsolved Mystery Show and things like that, one of the things that happens when people who talk about astral travel is that they often depict themselves as rising in an incorporeal form that's linked somehow by this intangible tendril, right?
Mm-hmm.
Back to their actual body. And often this is depicted as a tendril connecting pituitary gland to the where it would be in the spiritual body. And we don't just mean fictionalized accounts of astral travel. We're also talking about, you know, Stargate researchers, and most notably Ingo Swann, I think.
There are accounts of this.
Yeah.
Real accounts of people trying to do this. One last thing I want to talk about, Ben, is the symbolism of the pine cone and whether or not it has anything to do with the pineal gland. And if it does, why the heck are there so many pine cones in ancient symbology?
Ah, nice. Good catch. I can't believe we almost missed that one.
Well, I just have a couple of things here, and if maybe give me some thoughts on them if you don't mind. So You know what Angkor Wat looks like in Cambodia, Angkor Wat. And if you don't know what that looks like and you're listening to this, put A-N-G-K-O-R-W-A-T into a search engine and look at the spires on this old ancient temple. They don't necessarily look exactly like a pineal gland, but I've seen it referenced many times that this structure is really important, the structure of these spires. Then you go to Freemasonry. I don't know if you've been to the Fox Theater, right?
Yes.
So in Atlanta, there's the Fox Theater. It used to be a Masonic lodge.
And it still looks like one.
It really looks like one. And not in this building in particular, but there are several other Masonic buildings in Atlanta and other places that use the pine cone. A lot of times you'll see them on the ceiling with a light fixture or just a piece of metal hanging down. And it's a pine cone. It's absolutely a pine cone. Mm-hmm. Then you go to the Vatican and you look at, let's say, the Pope's staff that has a pine cone on it. Or maybe you go out into the Belvedere courtyard and you check out this ancient Roman fountain mm-hmm. that's sitting there, and it's a giant pine cone. You know, when you go into these conspiracy theories, as we do, mm-hmm. you start, symbols are highly important, or they seem to be very important. And it makes me wonder, again, is there something that these guys know about this pine cone that I don't know, man? Or is it just a symbol of releasing seeds and harvest and, you know, the flow of life? Maybe.
Sure. Well, all that's a great question. Great series of questions. All of the, especially in the ancient world, all of the symbols used have significance. This was, you know, if we look back just from a technological perspective, people didn't have the ability or the luxury of making disposable art, you know? So why would you waste your time on a meaningless embellishment? So we do know that symbols of any sort have incredible significance, especially the further back those symbols go. We could have a whole conversation about obelisk in a different episode, but the question then becomes, you know, what does this signify? What, if anything, does it mean in the modern day? And I think that's an interesting question, but I haven't, in my own, research, I haven't found much more than something pointing out the idea of this. And there could definitely be a correlation because Plato was talking about the pineal gland, as did René Descartes and a couple of other notable intellectuals. Descartes actually believed that it was the seat of the human soul. So maybe there is more to that symbolism than we know. But at this point, Matt, I have to ask you some stuff.
All right.
Where can people go to learn more about the pineal gland?
Well, if you want to go hardcore science, the first place that I would go is the Journal of Pineal Research, which is part of the Wiley Online Library. This is primarily studying the melatonin aspects of the pineal gland. But there's some fascinating stuff in there. It's updated all the time. Every once in a while, you'll get a free article, but most of it is you have to pay to read the entire article. But you can get an abstract and kind of see the ideas that are being looked at. So that's fascinating. If you want to hear people talk about this kind of thing, if you are not already subscribed to the Joe Rogan Experience, do that now and listen to Rogan and his friends talk about weird stuff. It's pretty great. Also, the Duncan Trussell Family Hour podcast, that's where I end up all the time when I'm editing.
Oh, I have a contribution here.
Sure.
If you're a fan of our show and you haven't already subscribed to Stuff to Blow Your Mind, you're welcome. You'll love it. They have an episode on the pineal gland. They also are fellow monster enthusiasts, so they cover a lot of stuff about monsters as well, and they get weird with it. So check out their podcast, which is free, and you'll hear more about this stuff. Check out our website, stufftheydontwantyoutoknow.com.
Yeah.
Right? Still not fired.
Reppin' what?
where you can find Matt and I getting into all sorts of online hijinks. As we're recording this today, we just mock strangled our mascot, Agent Scully.
That is my favorite thing I've edited in a long time.
I'm still really on the fence about how that's going to play out for us, but we'll see what people think when we talk about that. That's on our video, Can You Get Away with Murder, or Getting Away with Murder, mm-hmm. I believe. Mm-hmm. And in the meantime, you can find us on Facebook and Twitter. Matt, what do you want people to write in and ask us about this time around?
I want to know your thoughts on this tiny little gland in your head. First of all, we've kind of talked about it a little bit on Facebook already with mm-hmm. our video series. Oh, you know what I want to know?
What's that?
What is your weirdest dream that you've had that you think may be attributed to the DMT from your pineal gland?
Yeah.
Weirdest dream that you can recall.
And do you think you had a precognitive, a prefigurative dream? You know, is time really a little bit more elastic rather than linear in dreamland? Ah, interesting stuff. Good
Dude,
question.
Time travel is my favorite thing in the world.
You mean time travel other than 1 second at a time forward?
Yes.
Right?
Yeah, that's kind of boring. But it gets old.
And that is it for us today. Thank you so much for listening. We hope you enjoyed this. We know we touched on a lot of things and didn't dig too deep into some of the main themes we discussed. That's because we would like to hear from you before we jump all the way into the deep waters on things like fluoridation and things like astral travel. So write to us and let us know what we should cover, how we should cover it, and you know, something that you're rarely going to hear outside of a therapy session. Tell us what you're dreaming about, and tell us the weirdest, strangest dreams you've had. Wrap it all up in an email, give us a title with something like dreams in there, and send it straight to us if you wish.
And that's the end of this classic episode. If you have any thoughts or questions about this episode, you can get into contact with us in a number of different ways. One of the best is to give us a call. Our number is 1-833-STDWYTK. If you don't want to do that, you can send us a good old-fashioned email. We are
conspiracy@iHeartRadio.com.
Stuff They Don't Want You to Know is a production of iHeartRadio. For more podcasts from iHeartRadio, visit the iHeartRadio app, Apple Podcasts, or wherever you listen to your favorite shows.